Picture this for a second. You're sitting in a classic, architecturally rich university library. You know the kind,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. Heavy wood-paneled walls, that faint smell of old paper.
Exactly. And the shelves are just packed with the foundational textbooks of our field: Aker, Keller, Kapfer. But as you look around, the wood paneling starts to, like, dissolve. The shelves stretch and fold, and suddenly you aren't in a library anymore. The room seamlessly morphs into this high-tech, eight-dimensional geometric star chart, visualizing complex data constellations glowing in the dark.
Quite the visual.
Right. But that transformation is exactly our focus today, because every major brand framework, Aker, Keller, Kapfer, was built before you could measure brand perception mathematically. Spectral brand theory is not a competing framework. It is a formalization. The same insights, plus formal metrics, observer heterogeneity, and theorems about what single number measurement loses.
Which is such a crucial reframing for academics to hear.
Yeah, and we're going to cover four things: how SBT maps onto Aker's four perspectives with higher resolution, why the identity image gap is structural, not a communication failure, what concentration of measure means for consumer segmentation, and where the open empirical questions are. This is a research program, not a finished product.
I love that roadmap because treating brand strategy as a rigorous, engineering and geometric problem isn't about discarding those classics you just mentioned.
Right.
It is about giving them the mathematical engine they've always lacked. We're basically taking the qualitative brilliance of the past 30 years and wiring it into a measurable, testable reality.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because, I mean, if you work in marketing or academia, Aker's 1996 model, Keller's 1993 customer-based equity, and Kapfer's 2008 fourth edition Prism, they're the gold standard.
They really are. They built the multi-billion dollar brands we study today.
Yeah, exactly. But the relationship between those models and spectral brand theory, or SBT, feels very distinct. It's not just a coat of paint.
No, not at all. Classical brand theory assumed a somewhat uniform, objective brand identity, right? Something that everyone perceives in more or less the same way. But let's look at Aker's four perspectives: brand as product, organization, person, and symbol.
Classic buckets.
Very useful conceptually, but structurally, they bundle multiple completely independent perceptual channels together. SBT takes those and unbundles those four perspectives into eight distinct parameterized dimensions:
And those are
semiotic, narrative, ideological, experiential, social, economic, cultural, and temporal.
I want to pause on that unbundling, actually, because I imagine that's where the diagnostic power really lives. Take Aker's brand as organization, for example.
Right.
In that traditional perspective, a brand's values, its cultural codes, and its historical heritage are all just, like, mashed together into one bucket. But under SBT, those break out into the ideological dimension, the cultural dimension, and the temporal dimension.
Which fundamentally changes how a strategist responds to a crisis. I mean, think about it. If a CMO sees their brand as organization, scores slipping in a traditional model, they're essentially flying blind.
Yeah, they wouldn't know what to fix.
Exactly. They might try to fix their cultural messaging when the actual problem is, say, an ideological misalignment with a really specific subset of buyers. By separating them, the strategist can pinpoint exactly which channel is failing and for which specific audience.
So it's like Aker gave us a standard optical telescope to look at the stars, but SBT is the James Webb Space Telescope. We're looking at the exact same brand universe, but suddenly we have the resolution to see the chemical makeup of the planets.
That is a perfect analogy.
But I have to push back a little here. I'm struggling with this part. Aker's 1996 model helped build Fortune 500 companies. If I'm a CMO using Aker and my revenues are up, why should I care that my brand as organization bucket is technically three different dimensions? Why do we absolutely need this higher resolution?
It's a fair question. What's fascinating here is that the higher resolution solves one of the biggest subjective hurdles in traditional theory: figuring out what is core and what is peripheral.
Oh, the core versus extended identity.
Yes. Aker talks extensively about that, the idea that some elements of a brand must never change, while others can adapt to local markets. But how do you actually decide which is which?
Yeah, traditionally it involves a lot of guesswork. You hold an executive workshop and brainstorm.
Exactly the problem. And the loudest person in the room usually decides what the core identity is.
Yep, happens all the time.
With SBT, Aker's qualitative core and extended identities translate into empirically discoverable spectral weights. It builds directly on Carolyn Chang's 1970 INDS-SIA model.
Individual differences scaling, right?
Precisely. Instead of guessing in a boardroom, we can mathematically observe which dimensions a specific group of consumers heavily weight. If they heavily weight the temporal and experiential dimensions, those mathematically become the core identity for that group.
And the ones they ignore?
The dimensions they ignore carry less weight, making them technically extended. It takes the ego completely out of the equation.
Okay, so if we have this incredible 8-dimensional James Webb telescope, how do we actually calculate the distance between a brand and a consumer? Because I imagine drawing a straight line in 8 dimensions of human perception isn't as simple as, like, using a ruler.
Oh, definitely not. Standard Euclidean math absolutely breaks down here.
Standard math just fails.
Entirely. Traditional multidimensional scaling, or MDS, approaches in marketing usually force data down into 2 or 3 dimensions just to make a clean, readable, perceptual map.
Right, something you can put on a PowerPoint slide.
Exactly. But SBT operates natively in an 8-dimensional space. To do that without distorting the reality of the consumer, it introduces formal geometric metrics.
And what do those metrics actually look like when applied to brand signals?
Well, we have to measure 2 different spaces. First, there is the brand space, the compositional nature of a brand's signals. A brand only has so much bandwidth. If it leans heavily into ideological signals, it is proportional reducing its experiential or economic signals.
Because there's a finite amount of messaging.
Right. Because this data is proportional, SBT uses the Aitchison metric on the simplex. Second, there is the observer space, how different people weight those signals. For that, SBT uses the Fisher-Rao metric on the weight manifold.
But who says those are the only metrics we can use? I mean, couldn't someone just invent a different formula to measure this proportional data?
They could try, but they would be fighting mathematical law.
Really, law?
Yeah. This is where Senkov's theorem comes in. It's a fundamental principle in information geometry. It mathematically proves that these specific metrics are unique for this kind of probability and compositional data. You can't just slap a standard straight line distance onto complex proportional human perception and expect it to be accurate.
So what does this all mean? If we apply these unique metrics, how does it change our understanding of the space between the brand and the buyer?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it finally explains Aker's famous identity image gap.
Oh, okay.
Aker knew there was a persistent gap between what a brand intends to say and what the consumer actually hears. SBT gives this a canonical term, the rendering problem.
The rendering problem.
Yes. Roy and Banerjee quantified this gap back in 2014, but SBT proves that it is structurally irreducible.
Meaning it's not a gap you can just cross with a better marketing campaign.
Exactly. It is the mathematical geometric distance between the signals a brand emits and the specific perception cloud that forms in an observer's mind. The brand is the emission. The meaning is assembled by the observer based on their own unique spectral weights.
I want to look at a real-world application of that perception cloud, treating it with strict clinical impartiality for a second. Let's look at Patagonia.
Good example.
They emit very dense objective signals on the ideological dimension. If an observer has a spectral profile that heavily weights ideological alignment, their perception cloud renders a highly coherent brand conviction.
Exactly right.
But on the flip side, look at Tesla. There are immense ambient signals generated by the CEO's political and social activities. If an observer has a low tolerance for ideological signals, that objective signal data interacts with their spectral profile to render a fractured or unstable perception cloud, regardless of how good the experiential product signals are.
Right, because it's pure signal data interacting with an observer's spectral profile. And that framing highlights exactly why the rendering problem is an architectural reality. You cannot force an observer who is entirely focused on the economic dimension to suddenly care about your temporal heritage signal.
So if the rendering problem, this gap between what a company says and what a customer hears, is structurally irreducible, are you saying brand managers should stop trying to fix misperceptions with better PR?
They shouldn't stop trying to communicate clearly, but they must stop treating perception divergence purely as a failure of PR. It is a feature of geometry. The gap will always exist because observers are fundamentally heterogeneous in what they can perceive and what they value.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, especially when we look at how the industry currently measures success. Because we just spent all this time establishing these beautiful, accurate, formal 8-dimensional metrics. And what does the industry do with that complexity?
They crush it.
They crush it all back down to a single brand health score out of 100. It's exactly like metamerism in optics. 2 different physical light sources can look perfectly identical to the human eye under fluorescent light, but completely different in the sun. That 78 out of 100 brand score is just a perceptual illusion hiding the true color of the brand.
Yes. This raises an important question about the danger of the single score. What you just described is canonical SBT terminology, spectral metamerism.
Spectral metamerism.
It means any single number brand metric provably loses vast amounts of structural information. And we aren't just saying this qualitatively to criticize dashboards. There is a hard mathematical bound on this distortion, established by the Johnson-Lindenstrauss lemma in high-dimensional geometry.
Right, the JL lemma. I've seen it referenced in the literature, but what does it actually do to the data when we crush it down? Like, what does it mean for a marketer?
It tells us exactly how much truth we are destroying. If you project 8 dimensions down to 1 dimension for just 10 brands, the JL lemma dictates a minimum geometric distortion of 152%.
Wait, 152% distortion just for 10 brands?
Yes. And if you scale that up to a realistic competitive set of 50 brands, the distortion hits 198%. It completely annihilates the relationships between the data points.
So a CMO looking at a 1D brand tracker is essentially looking at static.
Worse than static, honestly, because static implies randomness. A single score implies false confidence. The projection leaves behind a 7-dimensional null space where the actual functional brand architecture hides out of sight. Think about your metamerism analogy. 2 brands can both score a 78 out of 100 on a tracker, but be structurally incompatible in reality.
Give me an example of 2 brands that look identical on paper, but operate in completely different universes.
Take Hermes and IKEA. Hermes has what we call ecosystem coherent architecture. It possesses towering semiotic and temporal signals. It's all about heritage and exclusivity. But it has incredibly low economic accessibility. It's mathematically designed to be scarce.
Right. You can't just walk in and buy a Birkin bag.
Exactly. IKEA, on the other hand, is signal coherent. It has massive economic accessibility and a highly consistent functional narrative designed for mass volume.
Completely opposite architectures. Hermes strengthens its core by actually shedding peripheral observers during an economic crisis, while IKEA transmits disruption uniformly across all its buyers.
Right.
But that single number dashboard tells the board of directors that both brands are sitting comfortably at a 78. They have no idea they are hallucinating their own market position.
And this mathematical distortion doesn't just affect how we look at brands. It completely warps how we look at the people buying them. In high-dimensional geometry, there is a phenomenon called the concentration of measure on the 7-simplex.
Whoa, okay, pause.
Yeah.
If you're a marketing professor listening to this on your commute or grading papers, concentration to measure on the 7-simplex probably just sounded like a spaceship engine. What does that actually mean for the human beings buying these products?
Fair point. A simplex is just the geometric space of probabilities that add up to 100%. What happens in high-dimensional spaces like our 8 dimensions is that the center of this space becomes surprisingly empty. The volume, the actual data, pushes outward to the edges.
Okay, so the middle is hollow.
Exactly. For marketing, it means the old terminology of consumer segments is functionally outdated. A demographic segment assumes you can draw a hard box around a group of people and find a neat, average center. SBT replaces this with the canonical term observer cohort.
Because in an 8-dimensional perceptual space, 57% of consumers actually sit in cohort boundary zones. The geometric reality simply does not support hard demographic borders. People assemble brand meaning fluidly across these dimensions, mostly out on the edges, not neatly in the middle.
Which explains a frustration every marketer has faced. 2 people in the exact same demographic bracket holding completely opposite brand convictions.
Yes, you see that all the time.
They belong to different observer cohorts because their spectral weights are different, even if their ZIP code, age, and income are identical.
The theorems and the geometry are flawless on paper. I mean, 198% distortion, the null space, the rendering problem, it's incredibly elegant. But academic listeners know that elegant math alone doesn't buy running shoes or electric cars. How exactly do we take this out of the 8-dimensional manifold and test these brand convictions in the wild?
That is the ultimate question. We must explicitly state that spectral brand theory is a research program, not a finished product. The mathematical structure is complete. The theorems hold. But the empirical field validation is the next frontier. There are currently 20 research papers on Zenodo. And to be clear, these are preprints currently under journal review, not yet peer-reviewed.
Important distinction.
Very. But they lay out the mathematical proofs and the initial case studies.
So this is an open invitation to the listener. If you are an academic publishing in the Journal of Marketing Research, Marketing Science, or Organization Science, This is where your expertise bridges the gap.
We need you.
The field needs panel survey data to track how these cohorts drift across the simplex over time. It needs eye tracking studies to see how semiotic signals are actually processed before they hit the perceptual cloud.
And critically, it needs conjoint analysis run at the dimension level rather than the brand level. We need empirical studies measuring how consumers trade off an ideological signal against an economic one when both are mathematically quantified. The theoretical bounds are proven. The next decade of academic research will be mapping empirical human behavior to those bounds.
Okay, let's pull all of this together because we've covered a massive amount of ground today. We started with the classics and we need to end with them. SBT is not a challenger to Aker, Keller, or Kapfer. It is the formalization of the insights the field already has. SBT is to Aker what behavioral economics is to classical economics, the same terrain, with the measurement tools the original couldn't have.
It provides three fundamental things that we're missing. Formal metrics, observer heterogeneity treated as a first-class mathematical object, and theorems about the structural limits of single-number measurements. The rendering problem is not a communication failure. It is structurally irreducible. You cannot close it. You can only measure it.
And when you do measure it, you realize how fluid the audience really is. When 57% of your consumers sit in cohort boundary zones, the segmentation model is not wrong. The geometry just does not support hard borders.
If single number brand scores are mathematically hallucinated, if they are just metameric illusions hiding in a seven-dimensional null space, how many millions of dollars of corporate capital are currently being misallocated based on brand health trackers that are blind to 7/8 of reality?
That is something to seriously mull over the next time you look at a dashboard. What color is your brand really shining under the surface? For the full mathematical proofs, episode 3 covers the four core results in detail. For the applied bridge between Aker's framework and spectral identity, episode 16 goes step by step through the formalization.